We're going to begin the afternoon session by having the commissioners introduce themselves. Let's start, please.
Bill Gilmore, Freeman Township, Franklin County.
Millard Billings, Hancock County.
Betsy Fitzgerald, Washington County.
Lauren Parker, Attorney General's Office.
Everett Worcester, Piscataquis County.
Peter Bray, Millinocket, Scott County.
Robert Everett, Oxford County.
James May, Mapleton.
And Peter, do you want to make your statement, please?
I've just been appointed to the commission, and I will be abstaining due to a lot of the background that I've been missing, that I missed.
Thank you. And Samantha has excused herself because she has a conflict of interest. Gwen has excused herself because she has a conflict of interest. So what you see is what you get. Would you like to make a statement?
Yes. So before we get started, we just want to recognize that there's been a lot of public interest and participation in this matter, which is great. But I want to remind everyone what the commission's role is with respect to CMP's site law application, and that's to say that it is limited in scope to considering the record evidence in light of the specific regulatory criteria in the commission's rules, which Bill is going to identify and walk through with the commission during this deliberative session.
Bill, you ready to go?
I am. Good afternoon, commissioners, Assistant Attorney General Parker. For those who don't know me, my name is Bill Hinkle. I'm staff of the Land Use Planning Commission, and I'm going to get into this presentation here on the NECEC project. So the commission has been diligently working on the site law certification for Central Maine Power's proposed New England Clean Energy Connect project for nearly 2 years. Today's deliberative session is an opportunity for you to review with staff and each other the evidence obtained over the last 23 months, to discuss the issues and questions you may have, and to consider the draft decision document provided by staff. I will note here that as laid out in the staff memorandum provided on the 4th, the commission may deliberate and choose to direct staff to revise any and all of the conclusions and findings made in the draft decision document. So while I'll be talking about certain recommendations by staff, that in no way confines the staff, the commission to those decisions. My presentation supplements the staff memo and the draft decision document provided to you on September 4th. And I'll provide some basic project overview, some helpful background information, summarize the staff recommendations and options presented in the draft decision document, and then assist the commission in addressing the remaining key questions about the certification decision. Please do not hesitate at any point during the presentation to stop and ask me for clarification or any questions you might have. The proposed NECEC project is broken down into 5 segments. Segments 1, 2, and 3 would be located wholly or partially within the commission's service area. Segments 4 and 5 would be located wholly outside of the commission's service area. Segment 1 is the proposed new 53.5-mile corridor that would be located from Beatty Township to Moxie Gore. Segment 2 is the proposed 21.9-mile segment that would be located within an existing corridor from the Forks Plantation to Moscow. Segment 3 is the proposed 71.5-mile segment that would be located within an existing corridor from Concord Township to Lewiston. This slide shows a closer view of the townships and plantations within the commission's service area. The role of the commission must determine whether the project is an allowed use within the subdistricts in which it is proposed and whether the project meets any land use standards established by the commission that are not considered by the Department of Environmental Protection during their review. The DEP will use this certification in its permitting process pursuant to the site location of development law. Regarding the allowed use determination, this table lists all the sub-districts in which the proposed project would be located and the use listing for each. A utility facility is an allowed use with a permit in all sub-districts except the PRR and PWL sub-districts. In those sub-districts, a utility facility is allowed with a permit by special exception. The purpose of the PRR sub-district is to provide protection from development and intensive recreational uses to those areas that currently support or have opportunities for unusually significant primitive recreation activities. By doing so, the natural environment that is essential to primitive recreation will be conserved. For the Commission to find that a use is allowed by special exception in the PRR sub-districts, the Commission must find that an applicant has shown by substantial evidence that A, there is no alternative site which is both suitable to the proposed use and reasonably available to the applicant, B, the use can be buffered from those other uses and resources within the sub-district with which it is incompatible, and C, such other conditions are met that the Commission may reasonably impose in accordance with the policies of the Comprehensive Land Use Plan. The focus of the public hearing held on April 2nd and May 9th, 2019 was the special exception criteria for PRR subdistrict. The project would cross or traverse PRR subdistricts at three locations: an underground segment crossing the Kennebec River, an overhead segment within a proposed new corridor near Beatty Pond, and an overhead segment within an existing corridor across the Appalachian Trail. The Commission must find that CMP has shown by substantial evidence that there is no alternative site which is both suitable to the proposed use and reasonably available to the applicant. I will now discuss this criterion for all three PRR subdistricts. This is a computer model of the proposed crossing of the Kennebec River using horizontal directional drill, or HDD, technology. Depicted here is the termination station looking north from the river. And here, this computer model depicts the proposed crossing with modeled and actual existing trees and vegetation. As you can see, no portion of the project would be visible from the Kennebec River PRR. The staff recommended findings and conclusions regarding the Kennebec River PRR are stated on pages 14 and 15 of the draft decision document. This states, quote, given the potential for significant visual impacts to recreational users on the Kennebec River from an overhead alternative, that the undergrounding alternative using a directional drill would result in no construction activity within the Kennebec River PRR subdistrict, and that the termination stations, which would also be located outside the Kennebec River PRR, will be well buffered from the river, the Commission concludes that there is no other alternative that is both suitable and reasonably available to the applicant outside of the Kennebec River PRR subdistrict. So are there any questions or discussion about the Kennebec River PRR before I move on to Beatty Pond?
Termination stations?
Yes.
Can you give me a ballpark size?
So the termination stations, if I recall correctly from the record, vary from maybe 70, 90 feet in height and would have a couple, somewhere in the neighborhood of around 1,000 square feet or maybe a little large. It's probably a little larger than that. I can check maybe if we take a break and get an exact size, but the height of the termination station at this location, I believe, is in the range of 70 to 90 feet.
So they're not just little buildings?
No, it's a substantial structure.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. Okay, so on to Beatty Pond. So this slide depicts the location of the Beatty Pond PRR subdistrict and the proposed new corridor. So Beatty Pond here, the PRR subdistrict extending around that into four townships. This photo simulation depicts the proposed conditions at Beatty Pond. CMP reduced the height of the structure closest to the pond to reduce the visual impact of the pole structure extending above the tree line. However, the tops of three structures, I recognize it's difficult to see on this slide, but there's two structures here and one here. The tops of those three structures and the shield wires would be visible from the pond within the PRR subdistrict. Some of the possible factors to consider when evaluating whether the project meets the special exception criteria are: CMP testified that the cost of land needed for an above-ground alternative south of the proposed route to avoid the PRR subdistrict would be 50 times the fair market value. An alternative above-ground route to the north would have increased visibility from Beatty Pond. The cost of undergrounding at Beatty Pond is approximately $15.3 million, or approximately 1.61% of the overall project cost. Temporary environmental impacts associated with undergrounding, and potential for increased access to Beatty Pond over permanent roads that would be needed to service an underground installation. The draft decision document at page 18 provides two options for the commission to consider. The draft language is: the commission finds that on balance, A, the benefit to recreational users on Beatty Pond of undergrounding the transmission line does not outweigh the environmental, technological, logistical, and financial implications of using this methodology in the Beatty Pond PRR, and is therefore not suitable to the proposed use or reasonably available to the applicant. Or B, the benefit of undergrounding the transmission line within the Beatty Pond subdistrict outweighs the environmental, technological, logistical, and financial implications of doing so, and is therefore an alternative that is both suitable to the proposed use and reasonably available to the applicant. I'll return to these options later in my presentation. Are there any questions or discussion about the Beatty Pond PRR before I move on to the Appalachian Trail?
Bill, how the connecting points between, if it was undergrounded, those connecting areas where the splice is made, how far are they apart? What is the maximum distance that an underground cable can be laid between points where it has to be connected to another section?
That certainly is an engineering question. I'm not sure that I know off the top of my head. I could look back through the record to see if there's anything addresses that. The termination stations would be outside of the PRR, if that helps.
So the distance there is like a mile and a half?
The PRR is a half mile.
Half mile.
Yeah.
Yeah, but the distance of the proposed line within the PRR, that could be done in one connection?
That's my understanding, correct. Yes, Bill.
Is there a definition somewhere of what reasonably available means?
It's not a defined term. That's certainly up to the commission here today and at other applications to decide what that means. What is reasonably available?
Thank you.
Okay, to move on. Okay, so the Appalachian Trail PRR. This slide depicts the location of the Appalachian Trail and proposed expansion of the existing transmission line corridor. Again, looking at the slide, the existing corridor is this blue line that comes down. The Appalachian Trail is this orangey-red line. And the location for the proposed crossing is right in here. Here we see a photograph of existing conditions at the proposed crossing of the Appalachian Trail during leaf-off conditions. This is the existing line there today. Here we see a simulation of the proposed conditions. This is the proposed new line, and this is proposed vegetative plantings. This is another perspective of the proposed new transmission line with existing vegetation along Moxie Pond. And then this is another simulation showing the proposed conditions with the new line and the vegetative buffer that's proposed. So I can toggle that if that's helpful. Existing, proposed.
And where's the Appalachian Trail in that picture?
So in this picture, the Appalachian Trail is actually located on what the Troutdale Road. So the Appalachian Trail comes, went the wrong way. So the Appalachian Trail comes through here, and then it runs along the Troutdale Road for a short segment here before tucking back into the woods. And so at this location, it's taken from the road, which is also where the Appalachian Trail is located. Millard.
In this picture, mm-hmm. the distance to the extreme structure, how far is that?
Based on my experience having been at this location, and this is an estimate, I would guess that this is about half mile. I could be wrong, so I, you know, don't hold me to that. But my guesstimate from my experience there is that it's about a half mile.
And going back the other way, it's 1,000 feet or more, going to the west.
Right.
North.
So you're asking like how far up this way?
Yes.
Right, so the proposed line or the existing corridors right here, the Appalachian Trail, the perspective that's shown in these photo simulations is standing here looking this in this direction.
Yes, but if you're standing on the road and you turn and look in the opposite direction, not looking across Joe's Hole, but looking back up the power line.
Right, so you look back up the power line.
There's a ridge that the power line is coming down.
Correct.
And you'd have to be back 1,000 feet or more.
There is some relief there. So there's a hill that will help to, you know, limit that distance, how far back you need to be. I don't know exactly how far back. It'd be several hundred feet anyway from the road. Before you wouldn't be able to see a pole.
So the whole thing would have to be approximately 3/4 of a mile underground so you didn't see any poles from the Appalachian Trail?
Right. At this location, I believe the undergrounding alternative that was considered was about a mile of undergrounding at this location. I can double check that too if I have some downtime here to fact check a little bit of my statements. Okay, so some of the possible factors to consider when evaluating whether the project meets the special exception criteria are that the project would be co-located with an existing transmission line. Alternative routes would result in crossing of the Appalachian Trail in one or more locations where there are no existing transmission line corridors. CMP provides an easement to the National Park Service for the Appalachian Trail. The new transmission structures would exceed the size of the existing line. The undergrounding cost for the Appalachian Trail at this location is approximately $29.8 million, or 3.13% of the overall project cost. There's considerations for noise and scenic impacts of undergrounding construction at this location, temporary environmental impacts associated with undergrounding, and termination stations needed for undergrounding would be visible from the Appalachian Trail.
Yes, but it's just like everything else, those termination things could be buffered, right? I mean, you're talking about putting up a buffer. You've showed some pictures about putting up vegetative buffers in certain areas. Just because you can see them doesn't mean you can't put a vegetated buffer around the termination points.
Right. It's the commission could certainly decide that if termination station, if the outcome was the termination stations would be constructed where they were visible from the PRR, that buffering was required to screen for that.
Yeah. You're going to buffer 80 feet high?
Well, that was my next question. On the buffering and these other aspects, what is the height of the buffering and how long does it take to get there? There's nothing that's going to be done overnight as far as the height is concerned. So if you don't underground it, then you're going to be looking at this stuff for how many years for it to grow?
Well, I don't think that there's a proposal that, you know, the current proposal is not, would not result, and the buffering that's proposed would not result in, at any point, there being no visibility of the line. I mean, if an overhead line is installed at this location, even with the buffering proposed, it will still be visible to users of the Appalachian Trail at this location. The buffering proposed is intended to help screen from the portion of the Appalachian Trail that's located on the Troutdale Road. So as hikers are walking down the Troutdale Road on the Appalachian Trail, additional buffer along Moxie Pond is what's intended to help reduce the scenic impact. Miller.
But in effect, doesn't that buffering really buffer Joe's Hole, Moxie Pond from the Appalachian Trail and still leave the power line visible?
It does.
And didn't CMP make the argument that they don't have permission to do undergrounding now?
So that issue did come up at the hearing. I don't know that that is entirely resolved at this point. I believe if CMP was required to go underground at this location, that they would need to work out the rights to do that and make sure that they in fact had those for this location. The easement expressly...
But the record showed that the National Park Service had rejected undergrounding in another location in a similar kind of situation.
Right. So the easement that CMP has and that's in the record, you know, expressly retains rights for additional overhead lines at this location, but it's unclear at this point whether undergrounding is another level of permission they would need to obtain and if they could get that permission, if in fact it's not provided in the current easement.
Well, I don't think there's any question that it's not provided in the current easement, is there?
I believe there's more work to be done on determining whether undergrounding is at this location is something that CMP has the ability to do.
I don't think the easement explicitly states that CMP reserved the right to run an underground transmission line in the easement area, but I think, and Bill, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, that the DEP commissioner had asked at the joint hearing whether CMP had approached the National Park Service and had a conversation about whether the National Park Service would allow it, CMP, to run an underground transmission line at that location, and that conversation had not occurred.
That's correct.
But CMP does have permission to do an overhead line from the National Park Service.
That's correct also.
So we know one is feasible. We don't know whether the other one is or not.
Correct.
Everett, when you're talking about feasibility, you're talking about permission to put the underground and not the aspect of the money.
Right.
Because they have a contingency fund of 15%.
Well, if the National Park Service says, no, we're not going to let you underground, then it's not feasible. And that's the way I'm using the word.
So, Bill. So this particular parcel of real estate, I'm assuming there was an easement on it when it was most recently acquired? There was already an easement on it for...
The AT
crossed this parcel long before CMP came along, maybe?
The record states that the transmission line predates the Appalachian Trail at this location. The easement dates back to 1980-ish.
So CMP owns the land, and CMP granted the easement to the National Park Service, and when it gave some of its rights to the property to the National Park Service, it expressly retained the right to run the overhead transmission line.
I think one of the important points about this location is the fact that the trail is actually located in the road. It's in the road. There's a gravel road there that's a logging road or access to the Moxie Pond and so forth, and the trail is in the road. They actually walk the road.
Proceed.
So the draft decision document at page 20 provides two options for the commission to consider. And again, as I stated before, these are two options presented. This is by no means limits what the commission can consider for additional options. The draft language is, the commission finds that on balance, A, the benefit to recreational users on the Appalachian Trail of undergrounding the transmission line does not outweigh the environmental, technological, logistical, and financial implications of using this methodology in the Appalachian Trail PRR and is therefore not suitable to the proposed use or reasonably available to the applicant. Or B, the benefit of undergrounding the transmission line within the Appalachian Trail PRR subdistrict outweighs the environmental, technological, logistical, and financial implications of doing so, and is therefore an alternative that is both suitable to the proposed use and reasonably available to the applicant. And again, I will return to these options later in the presentation. Are there any more questions about the Appalachian Trail alternatives at this point before I move on to buffering? So now we shift gears to the buffering criterion. The special exception criterion pertaining to buffering requires that requires the commission to find that the project can be buffered from those other uses and resources within the subdistrict with which it is incompatible. Beatty Pond is the only remote management class 6 lake within a half mile of the area that would be crossed or traversed by the project. The management objective of management class 6 lakes is prohibiting development within 1/2 mile of these water bodies to protect the primitive recreational experience and cold water lake fisheries in remote settings. The two main issues regarding buffering are access to and visibility from Beatty Pond. The vegetative clearing associated with the project has the potential to make Beatty Pond and the PRR subdistrict around the pond more accessible to all-terrain vehicles and snowmobiles. Opening this remote pond to more intensive uses by motorized vehicles contradicts the management objectives for management class 6 lakes. Staff have made a recommendation that the commission find that CMP must ensure access to the Beatty Pond PRR by all-terrain vehicles, snowmobiles, and other motorized vehicles from or along the right-of-way is prevented. The proposed project would include visibility of the tops of 3 transmission structures and the shield or conductor wires from Beatty Pond. Non-specular conductors are proposed for other portions of the project, such as those near Rock Pond and Moxie Stream, to reduce reflecting sunlight and visual impacts. Staff have made a recommendation to require the use of non-specular conductors for portions of the project visible from Beatty Pond. The draft decision document at page 28 provides 2 options for the commission to consider. The draft language is, in consideration of all the evidence, the commission concludes that A, the proposed project will be buffered from those other uses and resources within the subdistrict with which it is incompatible, namely recreational fishing on Beatty Pond, provided non-specular conductors are used, as required by Condition 2A of the site law certification, and that motorized vehicle access to the PRR subdistrict via the transmission corridor is prevented in accordance with Condition 2B of the site law certification. Or B, given that the tops of the 3 HVDC structures and their shield wires will be visible from Beatty Pond, a remote pond zoned for protection from development, the proposed project will not be buffered from those other uses and resources within the subdistrict with which it is incompatible, namely recreational fishing on Beatty Pond. Like with the other options, I'll return to this later in the presentation.
But we have no information that I'm aware of that tells us the level of activity on Beatty Pond. We don't know the intensity of the fishing activity there. It looks like 17 miles in the woods with a private camp. I guess I'm puzzled as to how the public gets in there on a regular basis and uses it.
Well, the protection, the resource protection subdistrict around these remote ponds is there because they are remote and because access is limited, and use is not similar to how they are in the more developed portions of the UT. There is a camp on the lake. Fly fishing is allowed at this on this pond. And access is somewhat limited. It's, you know, almost 40 miles down a dirt road from off of Route 201. There's no public points of access, no boat launch, and that's sort of the point of the PRR subdistrict around this pond.
And you can barely see the tops of 3 poles?
So from this location, from the PRR, the photo simulations suggest that the tops of 3 structures and the shield wires, maybe conductor wires, would be visible from the PRR.
I'm having difficulty comprehending how this is going to have much of a negative impact on the public.
So as my slide suggests, now is the time. If the commission wants to talk about this, this is a good time to do that.
Jim?
I would agree with you. I don't see it as a big negative. The concern that I would have is that the proposed line, if it is constructed, would by gating or otherwise limit the access to ATVs, particularly in the summertime.
Anyone else?
You make a good point. However, does Beatty Pond become less of a protected resource if this goes through? If you can see from the pond and see these three towers, does that change the designation?
The deal with the remote pond, the zoning limits access to the pond. In other words, there's a gated road there off which they walk from the end of that gated road to the pond. That's how they get there. Or they use four-wheelers. That's a possibility. But so that's the reason for that designation, is to limit access to the pond to protect the fishery.
So this might be a good opportunity for me to just reiterate the comprehensive land use plan management objective for these types of remote ponds. It says that the management objective of management class 6 lakes is prohibiting development within a half mile of these water bodies to protect the primitive recreational experience and cold water lake fisheries in remote settings. So that's the stated objective for these water bodies.
Well, there comes a point when this doesn't seem to make much sense to me. But technically, then, Viewscape is a part of the BRR, but we have nobody there looking at anything. This is, or very few people, apparently. And as I understand it, they're going to prohibit usage of the line for recreational vehicles. Is that correct?
That's what the staff recommendation is. If the overhead line is ultimately approved here, that it would be conditioned so that measures were taken to prevent trail building and ATV snowmobile access in this area where now there is that access doesn't exist.
Right.
So were these specific issues discussed with staff by the applicant before, number one, purchasing this parcel, and number two, before submitting an application for this power line? Is this something that's been known for some time before CMP bought these lots that ran from point A to point B? And obviously, zoning's been in place for a long time, and all of a sudden, this, not all of a sudden, but this flag has arisen that there are some issues. Were they not privy to those potential issues prior to?
Well, the PRR zoning at this location has been in place since 1978. The parcels purchased by Central Maine Power here were fairly recent, within the last few years. The Land Use Planning Commission was certainly not involved in discussions or negotiations about the siting of the line, prior to the request from the Maine Department of Environmental Protection asking us to certify the project.
But they did consider two alternatives.
Right, and so as discussed in the draft decision document, as required by the Department of Environmental Protection statutes, and particularly the Natural Resources Protection Act, the applicant is required to consider alternatives that would perhaps result in less environmental impact, stream crossings, wetland impacts, and so on. For the commission to evaluate alternatives in its PRR special exception review some understanding about the larger context of what alternatives were considered for the project, including various routes that were evaluated from the Canadian border down to Lewiston, is something that, you know, you have to take into consideration, is discussed in the draft decision document. And the alternative routes, ultimately, CMP concluded, would result in more impact. And so the selected route is the one before us and the one that CMP has decided is the best in terms of environmental impacts.
One question. If I didn't misinterpret something, I thought this route was selected because the adjacent parcel was too pricey?
At this location, the alternatives included evaluating a route to the north of the pond of the PRR and a route to the south. And the southern alignment would have been, based on CMP's testimony, 50 times the fair market value for that land. And then the route to the north would have resulted in higher visual impacts because of the topography in that location and going north of the pond. And so ultimately, CMP selected and put forth for permitting this what so-called preferred route, which takes it through a section of the PRR at Beatty Pond. Yes, ma'am.
Is cost a factor in a reasonable alternative?
Cost is a factor to consider in the reasonableness test, yes.
This is probably not a question you can answer, but when you say cost, what's the measure? I mean, is it 1.5? I mean, I guess maybe the percentage is 1.6% of the project or 2.9% of the project, or where, I guess, in the grand scheme of things, I don't think either one of those is big numbers. But when you translate that to dollars, it apparently is bigger. But when viewed in totality, is it? So I guess, you know, when you say cost, I guess I don't know how to think about that.
And I think that's probably a good point for the commission to discuss, because this is an issue that the cost component of whether an alternative is reasonable is subject to some discussion, and, you know, what you all feel is reasonable and what's not.
Well, if we're going to discuss it, I think we ought to know what the asking price for the parcel was.
Right, and that information is not in the record. We don't have that information.
But we do have plenty of information that suggests that undergrounding this line is not environmentally sound and will cause all kinds of environmental damage in terms of trying to build it, get all the equipment in there that's needed, and then having to keep a road open afterwards to service it. It's considerably more environmentally damaging to try to do an underground section around Beatty than it is to string an overhead line there. I mean, the record is full of testimony about that.
Whether the line is underground or overhead, there will be some impacts. There'll be some environmental impacts directly. There'll be some scenic impacts. The difference is kind of what, you know, it needs to be evaluated here, and whether there's enough benefit to going underground that outweighs the other, you know, considerations. The record has information both, you know, suggesting that the underground is a better alternative and suggestions that it's not. And so that's what the commission has to sort of weigh, put on the balance today.
I don't think it's even, I think the record is not even close on that discussion around Viaty Pond. I mean, it's just a horrendous issue to try to underground in that area and to service it afterwards. 40 miles back in no man's land. So my point is, I don't think a discussion on undergrounding around Viaty Pond makes any sense. It's either overhead line or I don't know what the alternative is that makes sense.
I would agree that the undergrounding doesn't seem to make sense in this location.
Appalachian Trail buffering is up next, and just I don't want to move on before you're ready for me to move on, but I'm just letting you know that's on the next up. Should I advance? Okay. Okay, so still talking about buffering, and now we've moved to the Appalachian Trail site. The existing transmission line predates the Appalachian Trail and the PRR subdistrict at the proposed location for the new crossing, and numerous transmission line structures are visible from the three areas where the project would cross the trail in this area. Native woody shrub species are proposed in CMP's Joe's Hole planting plan. A total of 93 shrubs are proposed to be planted on either side of Troutdale Road, in addition to maintaining non-capable vegetation within the corridor. The draft decision document at page 31 provides two options for the commission to consider. The draft language is, in consideration of all the evidence, the commission concludes that A, the proposed project, given the visibility of the existing transmission line, will be adequately buffered from those other uses and resources within the subdistrict with which it is incompatible, namely primitive recreational hiking on the Appalachian Trail, provided the vegetative planting plan described in CMP's Joe's Hole planting plan is installed and maintained for the life of the project in accordance with condition 2C of the site law certification, or B, the proposed project will not be buffered from those other uses and resources within the subdistrict with which it is incompatible, in that additional clearing and higher poles will be visible to primitive recreational hikers on the Appalachian Trail. And I'll return to this slide later on in my presentation. Are there any questions or discussion about buffering at the Appalachian Trail site that we want to stop on? Okay. So now we move on to, we're out of the PRR. We've cleared that for now. And all the other standards and the land and the sub-districts, the commission still needs to make findings on those, of course. And the draft decision document concludes that the project is an allowed use in all other sub-districts in which it is proposed, and that it complies with all applicable land use standards subject to certain conditions regarding the public health, safety, and general welfare standard, the vegetative clearing standard, and the traffic standard. So, are there any questions on these points here? Okay, so now we need to turn back to those other slides where I said we'd come back to, and so we're there now. And so for both the Beatty Pond and the Appalachian Trail PRRs, there are two questions for the commission. One is, has CMP demonstrated there is no other alternative to the project that is both suitable and available? And is the project buffered from other uses and resources with which it is incompatible? So those are the two main questions stemming from the criteria that must be addressed for both Beatty Pond and the Appalachian Trail. So now I gave you some handouts here, and this is of these slides. So you have this in front of you. It's a little easier to read. So we need to start honing in on how ultimately we get to the final conclusions that are laid out in the draft decision document. So the first determination point is regarding the alternative special exception criterion for Beatty Pond. So agreement that there is no alternative that is both suitable and available supports the findings in paragraph A. Disagreement supports the paragraph B. I can read those if you want, but I'm sure you're able to read on your own with the copy in front of you. And so I can just run through these and then generally get to how we consider the final conclusions, or, you know, certainly Everett, there's options available to you as to how you want to proceed.
Well, I guess what I'd like to do is stay on Beatty Pond and get some feedback from my fellow commissioners on how strongly they feel that CMP is tried to mitigate this, or how strongly they feel that they haven't. I need to get some sense of what people are thinking.
May I have a couple of minutes of my fellow commissioners' time? Thank you. I've been struggling with this issue since day one, and there's been a tremendous amount of reading material that's laid by my bedside day in and day out. I've gone after it when I found the time to do it, ignored it when I couldn't. And I'll be the first to tell you that I have the utmost respect for hydropower. I truly do. I think it's the way of the future. There's tons of water out there, and it's a good thing to do. But I struggle with tampering with someone's backyard to get there. And when I say that, yeah, there are no people probably beyond fishermen and hunters and occasional four-wheeler that takes a ride into Beatty Pond other than the camp owner of that camp on the pond. But that's their backyard. And so I have to believe that in all the negotiations that have gone on with CMP and landowners, and I've read all the deeds and I've looked at all the transfers, that some of these things weren't well known in advance. And we as commissioners were not involved with negotiating a price with the state of Massachusetts over what should or shouldn't happen in terms of cost. And please stop me if I speak incorrectly. And here we are sitting here with a group of seven or eight commissioners trying to make a decision on something that I truly don't know whether you've really given it your best foot forward or not, because we don't know the numbers on land acquisition. We don't know what other monies have been spent, and I don't truly don't care with other entities to try to get to where we are today. And I'd be shocked if there wasn't a better route, and maybe even a cheaper route. I mean, in most cases, I'm not a businessman, but I wouldn't go out and buy 40 miles of trail corridor and assume that I can come before a commission and expect me as a commission to stand behind what you did, because maybe you underbid a project, or maybe you didn't think of all the alternatives. They've been in the document from day one. So having said that, if I owned the land around Beatty Pond as an individual, I wouldn't want you in my backyard either way. Thank you.
Millen?
I guess my concern is, with determination number one, we only have two options. It's either overhead through the PRI or underground through the PRI. We haven't seen any numbers that show us that the cost outweighs, to go straight across, outweighs the impact on the protected resource. 50 times market value, if you're talking about tree growth land at $150 an acre, that isn't cost prohibitive in my mind.
Of course, that, given this discussion, that 150 times may end up being 200 times. And you can't force somebody to sell if they don't want to, unless you take it by eminent domain, and that's highly unlikely. Betsy, you want to weigh in on this?
Oh, I think so. I mean, I come back to, I guess, what I asked before, which had to do with if would Beatty Pond lose its PRR designation if all of a sudden there was a... That better? Okay, so would the pond lose its PRR designation if the line went across, and it, which in a very kind of odd little way brings me back around to there is only so much land, and there is only so many PRR designated ponds, and I'm honestly not sure that this pond would not lose its designation. I mean, it's there are reasons why ponds are designated PRR, and I'm getting lost in my thought here, but just the designation, I guess, is where I'm coming apart.
Yes.
So I don't, Stacy's here, and Stacy can help us with this. So I don't believe that the pond would automatically lose the PRR designation. That's a zoning sub-district designation that you, the commission, have applied. And so in order to change the designation, you would need to go through a rezoning process, which the staff or the commission could initiate. But maybe Stacy can speak to that a little bit to clear things up.
Thank you. Hi, this is Stacy Beyer with the Land Use Planning Commission, and I would agree with that. Just because there is new development that comes into the sub-district doesn't necessarily change the sub-district. We'd have to have either a staff-initiated or a landowner-initiated petition for rezoning for us to change the designation.
Okay. Thank you.
Bob, you have any thoughts that you want to share?
All through the CLEP, you look at, you know, specifically in Chapter 5 there, it talks about scenic views, how important scenic views are to the recreational aspect of the state of Maine. And at Beatty Pond, what we're doing now is we're going to look at an aspect of putting transmissions lines through a relatively pristine, unused area. So why do we have the CLEP, you know? The other aspect is I've seen figures for each of the other aspects of the trail, putting buffers up there. They state that it costs so much money, and it's a certain percentage of the total project cost, but we don't know what 50 times the land option is for the total cost. We're talking about a $1 billion project. So it would be interesting to understand what they're talking about as far as costs are concerned. Is it a substantial amount, because they, from what I've read, they've got 15% contingency fund, And I would think a contingency fund would be to look at aspects like this. And I don't see how you can buffer effectively 75 to 100-foot towers. One, the vegetation more than likely won't grow that high, so you're always going to have view problems, regardless of what your opinion is of them. And the length of time that the prospective buffers are to grow, so I think this, and I can't believe that there isn't some other alternative around Piatti Pond. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. So I'd just like to see more information on it. I have a problem with going through it. Why did we take Piatti Pond and put it a PRR district in the first place, indicating that we weren't going to have any commercial type facilities in it, and then turn right back around and say, oh, well, this one is going to be applied. We'll let this one go through. You know, it does. I've got questions.
Well, of course, our regulations indicate that by special exception, we can approve things in the PRR district. I mean, that's in our regulations. So it was never a hard and fast, you can't do anything in a PRR. Jim?
What are the heights of those proposed towers? They're reduced in height from what was originally proposed, aren't they?
Right, they are. I think the reduced height, I believe, if I recall, brings it down to around 71 feet, I believe is... And that's in the draft decision document.
And there's a limit to how low you can go because of the sag in the wire.
Right, there are engineering constraints, of course.
It's not like, well, we can just keep lowering them until they disappear because you run into the engineering issues.
Right.
So the buffering that's proposed is the lowering of the towers and... the issue with the cable of...
Correct. The buffering proposed by CMP was the lowering of the pole in that location so that it was not above the tree line, therefore would stand out less from the Piatti Pond PRR. The staff recommendation on using non-specular conductors is consistent with what's proposed for other portions of the line where visibility of the power cables is an issue. So that would get at buffering as well.
A couple of things, I guess, that I think about. To see that proposed line from the shore of Piatti Pond, you have to be on the north side of the pond. The existing camp that's there is on the south side of the pond. So if you're talking about disrupting your view of the woods, you're looking at that camp before you're going to see the top of any of those towers. So I come back to my biggest concern is controlling access along that proposed line, that is a big issue with a PRR. I do not see any way that this proposed line is going to impact the fishery in that pond. Yes, if there were better alternatives, I have to think that they would be before us. I guess, where I'm at.
So I don't get the sense that we have five votes one way or the other on this issue. And it's important that we try to get to that point one way or the other. So let's move on to the Appalachian Trail.
Okay.
And let me see what my fellow commissioners are thinking about the power line crossing them.
Okay, so again, just bringing us back into focus, alternatives is the criterion we're talking about. Now we're at the Appalachian Trail. And so the agreement here that there is no alternative that is both suitable to the proposed use and reasonably available to the applicant supports the findings laid out in paragraph A, and a disagreement would support paragraph B. So is there an alternative to the proposed overhead transmission line at the Appalachian Trail, PRR, is the question.
If I remember the location, there was like an opening. The power line came down over the hill, and then it was open going across the trail and going across and going up on that bluff on the other side. Is that, am I in the right place?
Right. So standing on the road there, the Appalachian Trail heads north up Troutdale Road and then tucks in to the left. It back into the woods and then sort of parallels the existing transmission line in that location. And so when you're down on the road, you can look in both directions and see the transmission line.
Right.
And so the trail runs down the Troutdale Road and then crosses over Joe's Hole and then continues on the other side of the pond. Does that help?
I think so. Okay. So I understand why perhaps going underground, although I still think that just laying the cable in there has merit as an idea, that you kind of snake down the side of the hill, just zip through the water and up the other side, and it certainly would not get your attention the way a line going across up in the air would. And I'm not necessarily suggesting an alternative because I don't, but if you move up or down that road, you could cross in a less conspicuous place. Is that true? Or would that be true?
If the proposed alignment was moved to a different location, the testimony suggests that it would cross the Appalachian Trail in new locations where there, so there'd be multiple locations where the Appalachian Trail would be crossed by transmission lines if there was an overhead crossing. If CMP was to move the location to a different spot, is that what you're asking? If they were to move
it? Yeah, but I don't mean very far. I just mean move it over enough so that it's not crossing conspicuously in the wide open space between.
They would have to create a new wide open space in a new corridor. They would have to clear a 150-foot wide swath of trees in order to put an overhead line in anywhere.
Okay.
And so the idea here is that they would widen the existing corridor by 75 feet in order to accommodate the new line. If they were to move it to a different location so it was in, as you describe it, a less conspicuous location, they would have to create a new cleared swath of vegetation.
Okay, I'm not asking the right question. Let me think
about
it.
Maybe I'm not answering correctly, so that's fair.
I'll try this again. You have a 150-foot wide swath. If you added 75 feet to it, what I'm asking is, instead of going down the middle of the swath, can you go down the side of the swath, still in the clear, but on the side of it so that...
With an overhead or with an underground?
Overhead. Well, underground, I mean, you can't see it if it's not even underground, right. But just you just lay it in the water.
So the way it's been explained is that there has to be some separation between the existing line and a proposed new line. I mean, they obviously can't be touching each other. There has to be amount of separation there.
Yeah.
And so what's proposed is that they would need to clear 75 feet of additional width in that area in order to accommodate a new overhead line.
That had enough separation.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, obviously CMP's engineers worked out those details, and we're working with the proposal before us, which is at that location, add a new line, that would necessitate the widening of the corridor by additional 75 feet to 225 feet.
And that widening of the corridor would go on for 21 miles, is it?
I believe that's correct, yes.
Okay, thank you.
One of my thoughts about this site is that given that the trail is in the road, it's not exactly a pristine crossing, if you will. I mean, they walk down the road. That's where the trail is. So, and the fact that there is already an existing line there, I don't see a big concern about widening the existing right-of-way to accommodate the new line.
Millard?
If the line goes overhead, you have to clear another 150 feet in width. Is that correct? 75?
There's 150 cleared, roughly 150 feet cleared now.
Okay. And then you're going to increase it by 75?
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. But if you go underground, how much do you have to clear? Do you still have to clear 75? If you go underground, can you stay in the same cleared opening?
So in the new corridor, the alternative evaluated that underground alternative, and there would have to be a 75-foot wide swath cleared. In the co-located area, I believe it's less, but I can't recall if that number... I can't recall exactly what that is, but I do believe it's less than an additional 75. I could be wrong on that.
So the actual scar across the trail is going to be the same width regardless. It's just whether there's power lines over it or not. But
that's the main difference is whether you can see anything standing on the surface of the earth at that point, right? In terms of structures.
Yeah. Is there already a viable access road to that location?
Right, so the Troutdale Road is it runs up along the west side of Moxie Lake, and there's several camps in there. Some of them are pretty old. And so that, you know, I believe it is a privately owned road, but it's certainly used by the public. So that, you know, there is plenty of access to that point.
For the kind of construction equipment it would take to do undergrounding?
I don't believe there's any testimony that undergrounding is not possible there because of the constraints of that road.
Okay. Is that year-round road?
I don't think I'd want to drive it year-round, but you might be able to get certain vehicles down there year-round, but I'm not sure if it's, you know, very well maintained in the dead of winter. I think maybe on the fringes of the roads, there may be some camps that are utilized more on a year-round basis.
I just worry that we easily throw out that we can underground it here, and it'll be obviously not visible. But there's going to be a lot of visible scars as a result of trying to do that there. And, right, and they're going to extend way beyond this one crossing.
The CMP testified that the majority of impacts resulting from undergrounding construction would be temporary in nature. So there will be some impacts. There will be some changes to the land as a result of needing... They can't let trees grow up over the underground line, obviously, because of safety issues and access issues. So there would still be a clearing that would be required for an underground installation.
But I'm talking more in terms of this testimony all throughout in terms of what would be required to get these vehicles into these remote areas, including having to redo bridges, widen roads. And we're talking about a private road. And we're assuming, oh, well, that's no big issue, you know. But I think it's a huge issue. Maybe I read something different than anybody else, but I mean the testimony was scalding against undergrounding in that particular area because it's so remote and it would require so much environmental damage. And it would be ongoing because you'd have to keep the thing open to so that if there was a breakdown in the line, you got to get in there in the winter. And you got to get in there in a hurry. I think undergrounding just doesn't make sense. Environmentally, cost-wise, or just common sense-wise. In those remote areas, it's... But it's easy to say, but it's... I can't see it as feasible. So I take it we don't have an agreement on the Appalachian crossing either.
Well, everybody has not spoken.
Okay, let's hear from the people who haven't.
I haven't spoken on this issue, but I do believe that those that hike the AT, and God love them for making the attempt to do that, cross under and over power lines the whole route from Georgia to wherever it stops, top of Katahdin. And the only way around this is to move Katahdin down south of this road or move on.
So maybe we're closer on the Appalachian Trail solution than I thought. Let me come at this another way. Is there any commissioner who's really adamantly opposed to CMP putting an overhead line in that area?
I'm not opposed to it, but I'm not for it either, because I know you speak about the aspect of the extreme cost of undergrounding and the amount of environmental damage, but then I have to look back at the Portland pipeline, and that went very close to my residence. And they put that up there lickety-split, and I didn't see that much environmental damage when they did it. I watched part of that last...
But a pipeline is a whole different creature than an electric line.
Well, it is, but still, even if it's overhead or underground, you're still going to have maintenance. You're still going to have aspects that it could be damaged. I don't care if it's in the air or under the ground. I don't think that one over the other has any more amount of difficulty maintaining it than the other. You know, I don't believe that being underground you have more disturbances as opposed to being in the air, because you still have broken wires and tower maintenance and that type of stuff. So,
we have a couple more we can go to if you want to carry on.
Go ahead.
Okay. Okay, so we are on to buffering, the buffering criterion. And the third determination point here is regarding the buffering special exception criterion at Beatty Pond. Again, an agreement that the project would be buffered from other uses and resources with which it would be incompatible supports the findings laid out in paragraph A. And a disagreement that it would be buffered supports the conclusion findings and conclusions in paragraph B. So then again, the question at hand here is the proposal buffered from other uses and resources within the Beatty Pond PRR with which it would be incompatible? And we've called out recreational fishing on Beatty Pond as being that primary use of the area that potentially is incompatible.
Well, if I was fishing on Beatty Pond, I don't think I'd be looking up at the top of the trees to see if I could see a pole. I mean, fishermen fish. They look at the shoreline, they look at the water, they throw their lure. I can't see that two or three poles sticking up above the tree line a half a mile away is going to ruin a pristine fishing experience. I don't get it. I mean, the bigger question here is not have they done a reasonable job buffering this line in this area. I mean, there are commissioners who say that line shouldn't be there. Buffering is a secondary issue, it seems to me. If you've got two or three commissioners who say, you know, that line shouldn't be there, well, what's the point of talking about buffering?
Well, and Chairman, I say it shouldn't be there because I've not been privy to, I don't really care about the cost, but there's got to be some reason beyond just, it's 50 times higher to buy that lot than it was the rest of them as to why they've chosen this route. We can all read, and we know what was submitted to us, but what's an exorbitant cost? Again, I heard the tree growth argument. In the grand scheme of things, for a $1 billion project, I don't know who the landowner is. I think I might know. Doesn't make any difference. Somebody walked away from the table because they thought it was too high and easy to go this route, and presuming that we would authorize the special exemption privilege can put it where they want to, and I don't think that's fair.
Well, I'm not sure that I can testify to anybody's motivations. All I can do is deal with what's before us.
I guess I'm persuaded by your argument that if there is only one road in there and one camp in there, and that's privately held, I'm not sure that the public is being, whatever the word is, I'm not sure that they're being I can't think of the word. But on the other hand, I come down on the side that I'm not the least bit convinced that the lines ought to be there in the first place.
We're going to take a 5-minute break. Let me see if I can summarize where I think we are. For those of you who don't know, it takes 5 commission votes to affirm something or deny something. We're a little unique in that regard, but it's written right in the statute. So it takes 5 votes to carry the day one way or the other. At this point, I think we're comfortable with the Kennebec Gorge. I think we're probably grudgingly comfortable with the Appalachian Trail. And I think we have sort of a deadlock on Beatty Pond. Rather than proceed at this point with a lack of 5 votes one way or the other, I'm going to move this issue to the October meeting and close this session.
Yes.
Before we close the session, just a word of caution that this matter is still pending. So the Administrative Procedures Act prohibition on ex parte communication still applies. So if people want to have any comments or questions about any issue of law, fact, or procedure, those should be addressed to the Land Use Planning Commission staff and may not be directly or indirectly addressed to the commission members.
Meeting adjourned.